Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Hunting Beast Podcast, your source for hunting tactics, news, and stories. And now your host, Mario Traficante.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hunting Beast Podcast. This week, Dan and I will continue to answer questions from the Hunting Beast Forum.
Swamps. I'm hunting a spot that's like a private spot. Nobody else is going in there. Right. It's mine. There's probably as many people that trespass in that 20-acre spot as what I get that wander through my public spot. Not many. The deer's bedding there because nobody goes there. So you got to treat that spot just like any other spot and figure it out with the methods that we've talked about. And maybe, I mean, it's being private. There's one thing you could do. You put a cell cam in there. You could do that, you go in there in September and put a cell cam and leave it for the season. And
I think, I can just bring up an example of the small property that I hunted for a while. Like Dan mentioned, I think timing during the year and patterns is key, right? So on this property, like I mentioned before, you had a field that sort of wrapped like this, and then there was another back field here, and then you had this transition line that ran the full length of the field, okay? There was a line of oaks here, a chunk of oaks here, all right? During the early season, so a September hunt, this whole ridge from here over was extremely thick. You had full leaf cover, and there was oaks spread out throughout this ridge. So our access point is right here. You could come in here and you with my eyes, you couldn't see across this property, all right? So I identified over the years that there were a couple key bedding spots here and over here. And I knew there was bedding on the lower side of the neighbor's property. So pattern-wise, early season, what I started to see, and we saw this happen multiple times, is we'd get bucks coming on a bedding, and they'd always come out of this corner and they'd hit this oak. And then they'd walk the transition line of the property and they'd feed in front of this oak. Now that was like early season patterns feeding on those acorns, okay? Now, if we didn't pressure this area too much, and this gets tricky because it's hill country and you've got wind coming over here and how do you access this, and with the thermals going up the hill and that whole thing, that's still hard to hunt these beds. But deer would hold up in here if you could plan out a hunt on them, and they would come to these oaks. So as an early season pattern, like Dan says, the only reason I know this is after years of hunting it and screwing it up. I'm not going to say that I was smart enough to set up an observation stand. I figured it out because I was hunting the edge of the field, and there I see these bucks coming out.
You just took the five-year plan instead of the one-day plan.
Right, I took the five-year plan. But, so, once you start to realize this, you're like, well, oaks are dropping. there's a trail coming out of bedding down here.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen big bucks show up in these two spots mm-hmm. during these days, you know, first week of September. It's likely that's a good
and
spot.
And once
to
you get
on.
Those observation eyes, you start to see trends with other properties.
Right.
And that's a big thing, too, that a lot of people don't get about hunt multiple properties, is that when you start really moving around hunting different places and scouting different places and always having your eyes into stuff and using that, your eyes more for observation and really learning from what you see, you start getting to the point where you can look at a property and go, the buck's going to be there, he's going to come out here, he's going to do this, and they right. do it.
Right.
You know,
And then as the year went on, so after you get some of that foliage drop and the surrounding farms, you know, maybe they go to beans versus corn, but then you see a change. Like these spots, bye-bye. There's no more deer movement in daylight anymore in those spots. All of a sudden, these beds that were populated when there was heavy foliage here, gone. I mean, the first time that you come in here and that foliage drops, and you could see across the two ridges out mm-hmm. into the field. Again, if the predominant wind is coming here and a buck's sitting here, he's watching. Mm-hmm. He's watching us walk in. So then it switched to that pre-rut or rut hunting, you know, mentality where there's one thick spot left and they travel across the property, you know, in a certain way. Like there's, you know, trail that came here and it forked here and it forked down here. So it was like this was the apex spot where everything kind of spread out, whether it was coming in this direction. So for pre-rut and rut, focused on this spot. But I knew that there was bedding over here on the neighbor's property. There was bedding over here on the neighbor's property, but I can't hunt that. I can only hunt how they traveled through the property I had access to. And that meant instead of hunting it, honestly, you know, 15, 20 times a year, going down to hunting it five times in a season, or maybe two times in a season. Once in the early season, and then a couple sits during that pre-rut. And you're looking at a 70-acre property, and that's all you're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now a guy may say, oh, you know, plant a big food plot here, plant a big food plot there. You know, I never had the time or anything to do that. Would that have pulled in more deer earlier on and changed patterns? Yeah, probably, but
yeah, but
you know,
you're probably still killing the big bucks back where they were.
Right. So it's...
You just might have had more on the property, though.
Right. Right. I think we answered this one. It's just, Dan and Mario, what constitutes hot versus warm versus cold sign? What decision do you make based on that sign? I talked about that.
Well, you know, one thing is we talk about hot sign a lot and cold sign and stuff. But if you go into a bed area that you got confidence in and it's cold sign, don't turn around and walk out. A lot of times those big bucks aren't leaving a lot of sign. Mm-hmm. Hot sign, what it does for me and what constitutes that is fresh tracks, fresh droppings, fresh rubs. I mean, stuff that you look at it and go, this is done in the last few days. Because their patterns change a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's hot sign. But now, to answer that part of the question. But, you walk into these spots, and you're planning on hunting there, and you don't see hot sign. I mean, if it's muddy ground, there's no tracks, yeah, spin around and leave. But if there's a little bit of deer sign and stuff, and you're like, I don't know, you know. One buck, getting up into bedding, passing through quickly, and going someplace else might not be leaving a sign. And what I do see is the two-year-olds and sometimes the three-year-olds leave a lot more sign than giant bucks. Old bucks, it's almost like they know better than to leave that sign around their bedding area. The biggest buck I've ever shot, ever, score-wise, there wasn't a rub or a scrape within 100 yards of the bed that he was using. And I watched him with glasses bed in that spot for 2 years, and I picked up one of his sheds in that bed, and there wasn't a rub anywhere near it. If you would have walked up to that bed, you'd have saw a worn-out bed, but you wouldn't have seen hot sign.
Right.
So don't abandon something because it doesn't have the hot sign. What hot sign means is if you run into sign and it's someplace where you're, I was thinking about hunting here, set up, hunt, you got sign there. but don't abandon spots that don't have it. I mean, I kind of went a little off of his question.
No, but it makes good sense, because here's another comment on that. Remember that a deer is an animal. They're making sign, whether it's scenting, whether it's, you know, making a rub, which is releasing scent, whether they're rubbing their orbital gland, whether they're peeing on an area, making a scrape, which is expanding their tarsal glands and their glands in between their hoofs. You know, these things, this is all a different way that they communicate to each other. And sometimes that's a hard concept for us to imagine, because it's probably good that humans don't do that. But we communicate through nonverbals, our expressions, right? Through talking, okay? We're much more visual. Where deer and a lot of other animals, they're using scent to communicate, right? They're using some of those visual cues and their topography in nature to travel through their environment. So if you have a mature buck and he doesn't have to compete with anything else, and he's kind of the dominant buck in that area, and you have low deer densities, mm-hmm. you're probably not going to see as much sign. Where you have higher deer densities,
yeah.
higher mature buck deer densities,
absolutely,
because that buck now has to compete.
Right.
He has to compete, and he has to also show that I'm going to scent here, I'm going to mark here, because he's showing those doe, he's showing those other deer that this is his territory.
Yeah, you know, you say that, and remember, now I've hunted both. I've hunted stuff where there's one big buck I want in a mile of land, and I've right. hunted managed land where there's 20 giant bucks running around.
Yeah.
And you get into that managed land, and every one of those big buck bedding areas is marked up aggressively.
Yeah.
You get into that public land, and where that huge buck is, none of the other bucks are allowed in there. They know better than to even mess with that guy. He owns it. He don't have to rub that stuff. What he's rub marking is when he gets to a food source and, hey, somebody's been here. You shouldn't be here. And he's marking, letting them know. Or, hey, there's a doe coming through here. Hey, look at this, babe. You know, that's what he's marking. He's not marking that bedding area. But those younger bucks are aggressive. They are trying to establish their spot.
Yeah, they're trying to assert their dominance.
They're like a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, teenagers are going to go around, hey, look at me, I'm tough, you know. One piece of sign, to go back on this guy's thing, that I think is really important. You don't see it a lot. You got to look for it. But it's when you find a scrape that's associated with bedding. Usually, when you do, it's two buck bedding areas competing against each other. And there's a scrape, like a community scrape between the two. And they mark it a lot of my biggest bow kills came from those types of scrapes, and they came in September or early October, when you really wouldn't think of a scrape, but really, I mean, probably my two biggest bow kills came from that exact scenario. And the one was an 11 pointer that was probably pretty close to Boone and Crockett. He was in the 160s. That buck, I watched him from a hilltop. I glassed him. He was bedding in a bowl in a river, and he would come out to the scrape. Even in August, I was watching him come to the scrape in daylight, work that scrape before he'd move on. And no matter what he did, he'd always make it to that scrape before he moved on. And I watched that and observed it. And I had a bear hunt that year. When I got back from that bear hunt, it was deer season already, and I raced straight to that tree. I think it was the second day of the season. And I got up that tree, and it was raining all day. And as soon as that rain stopped, it was driving him nuts. His scent wasn't in that scrape. He got up, walked that scrape, and I shot him in the middle of the day. And the other one was the 400-pound slob. Mm-hmm. Every buck that would come out of bedding, these two bedding areas, would go to that. I was watching that from a parking lot with glasses. We talked about that earlier.
Yep.
Watching that buck and another one, and a couple other ones, go to this scrape, and they'd come from the two different bedding areas, and they'd work that scrape, and then they'd move on. And they weren't really aggressive towards each other, but they're letting each other know that they're there, probably working up towards rut, right? When they're going to be a little more aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, one of the deer up here on the wall was an example of a spot that Dan actually identified from a...
Yeah, I saw that scrape
aerial.
From my tree.
Well, yeah, but the spot was... Yeah, you picked it from...
The aerial put us there, though.
Right, the aerial put us there, but then... I mean, same thing. You're sitting here with an island. Let me get a marker that works.
Kind of a point.
Yeah. Zoom this in a little. But yeah, you're sitting on this point, I guess. It kind of goes like that. But, you know, we knew that there's bedding over here, potential bedding. There's bedding out here. And there's bedding right here. And there's another small satellite island over here. And
there's even bedding over here that was feeding off of that.
Yeah. And, you know, again, you know, I'm telling Dan's story, but because it worked out in my favor as well, but he walked this transition here, identified a tree, and right in front of it he found this community scrape, you know, right here. And what we noticed is there was this convergence of trails coming from here. And off these sides, there was some coming through, but they were also cutting across here. So it was like what you just described, everything that was coming out of bedding. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know at the time what was primary, what was secondary, and what was coming to scent check that spot. Mm-hmm. And that year, Dan actually shot a buck out of there early season, and I went back in late in October and shot another one out of that spot.
Mm-hmm. From my point of view, I think... I hunted over here a little bit, mm-hmm. but we identified a lot of this stuff, but we went in here off of maps. So I hunted over here a little bit, and I knew there was some stuff going on over there, but I was interested in what was going on over here. And I had a scrape between bedding here, too.
Yeah.
And that was causing bucks to come in there, and that's how I got my buck.
Yeah.
Twice, 2 years in a row, I got bucks associated with that scrape.
Yeah.
So I had forgotten about those when I was mentioning those other ones.
Yeah.
But while sitting there, I watched deer come in from the other bedding because, once again, I'm getting into a position where I can kill, but I can see the swamp.
Yeah.
I can hear the swamp. And I watched the bucks all kind of come from all the bedding and meet over here. And through the brush, I could make out, I couldn't quite make out how big they were, but I could see tines, and I could see bucks working a scrape. And I shot my buck, and I think that's where I said, man, you should get in here. There's a scrape there.
Yeah.
All the bedding's relating around that scrape, and you got in there, and what happened?
Yeah, it was, I mean, we waited, I think it was 3 weeks later. I went one other sit back there, saw one lone deer, and then got back in there, let it cool off, and got back in there one other time. Mm-hmm. This time the buck came out of this bedding, is mm-hmm. what we presumed, and walked to that transition, and I got him. But that, you know... I had to sit in this spot last year because we just had to try it mm-hmm. out. You know, you had one sit back there. I had one sit. I had bucks come out of this bedding. Two bucks, smaller bucks, come and walk across this transition. It was a small, like, four-pointer and an eight-pointer. And then there was some large buck that I could see. Again, it was 100-plus yards out. But I saw him. I could hear bucks wrathing around in here and clinking antlers. And that buck came to like a high spot in the swamp, and he sat up on a licking branch right there. Now he was, you know, over 100 yards out, but I could tell it was a mature animal, big body. But it's just one of those spots where you could see everything that was going on, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, you think about that hot sign, and really, it's kind of revolutionary in the fact that nobody's really discussed it like we're discussing it. You know, but people have called them primary scrapes and they come in early and they're there all year kind of thing. But I think a lot of what people are calling primary scrapes are really what we're looking at, and they don't realize that the bedding's associated with it.
Yeah.
The reason those bucks are meeting there is because they're coming out of bedding. And we know that. I mean, it's not something I'm just making up. I mean, we know that. We've backtracked the trails that go straight to the beds and come in there. And it's been buck after buck after buck we've killed like that. And really, that's been the most consistent thing I've had for sign-wise. This guy's question was about hot sign.
Yeah.
That's been about the most consistent piece of sign I've had where I kill big bucks. And when you find that, Especially if it's not in rut, because rut's going to confuse you because you're going to see scrapes everywhere.
Right.
But especially when it's not in rut and you start seeing scrapes and they're near bedding, set up a freaking stand.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you how many times that's paid off for me. And as we're sitting here talking about it, I'm thinking about, oh, that buck too. That buck too. And people always say, well, I don't hunt over scrapes because I've never killed bucks on scrapes. Well, this kind of scrape you do. And I've killed a lot of bucks that way, not only for myself, but I put other people on them. You know, and even when I guided, we had spots like that. It seems like you find a scrape like that, if it's in September or early October, and it's associated with two bedding areas, it's almost like a slam dunk.
Yeah. And it's a cool, when you're on it and you get the opportunity to hunt over a spot like that, it makes for a pretty fun set. Because in the swamp, you will hear... You'll hear deer start to get up,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you'll hear that tertiary, that secondary, and that primary bedding, and it happens right at those different times. You know, at like 4:30, you start hearing the and you hear them start breathing through, you know, their nose. You'll hear the, and then you'll hear that start slosh, and you hear all the different deer get up, and they start moving around and interacting, and this whole area will light up, and you'll see a wave like. You'll see a couple immature bucks come out, and then maybe you see a little bit bigger one, and then if you're lucky enough, when you have enough daylight left, depending on your proximity of bedding, that big guy will make it.
Yeah. You talk about...
Because they're all trying to get to
you
this...
You talk about how far those bucks move in daylight. You're sitting on that scrape, that buck was bedded right here. I mean, what is that? I mean, I don't even think that was 100 yards to that scrape, and when you shot that deer, it was at closing time. Yeah. I mean, it was right there.
Yeah.
And that solid swamp.
Yeah.
That hunt to me was a special hunt. When you got that buck, I felt so cool for you.
That was
fun. I mean, we went out there. I love, that's a, you know, I have a hard time watching my own videos because I edit them for so long. They drive me nuts watching them because it's me talking.
Yeah.
But the one part I like about that swamp video is that reaction that you have. When you're like, I forget exactly how you said that, but... Damn right I'm happy. However you did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love that. I mean, yeah. that was a great time.
No, that was a fun hunt.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Hopefully we have many more of those to come.
Yeah, just you cool it on shooting bigger ones than me in any given year.
Hey, I can't help, you know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right.
I shouldn't have been so greedy about that other spot first, right?
No. Yeah. Well, that's all right. This is what it is. I hope we both have success again this year. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
So. All right. Next couple ones here. So there's one that's just general Big Woods hunting info. Dan.
Okay. Big Woods info. One tip with that... would be don't look at a giant woods. Break it down.
No.
Look at little sections. Try to take the look at that woods and say, what is the best area in here and why? You know, what's got the terrain breaks? Where isn't anybody going? And look at that little section, take a 40 of it or whatever, and concentrate on that until you got it down. Then start expanding out. If you start trying to look at that whole big woods, it's just going to be confusing, it's going to be overwhelming, it's going to be hard. I would break it down, find a little section, and hunt that. The only way I go off of that is, number one, I want to expand from that. I learn a section, well, then I'm going to learn another section. I'm going to learn another section. You know, and it's a matter of what a guy can handle. But I'll go venture off of that when something big shows up. I mean, like, say, the bear bait buck.
Right.
Then I'm in there. You know, I'm going after that animal. You know, or there's big signs someplace. But then still, I'm concentrating on a small area. And those bucks are not as much nomads as what people think. They're not wandering around for miles and miles and miles. They're holed up in some little area. They learn a way to survive in a small area. When I get into big woods, I am not concentrating on solid timber. I'm looking for features.
Yeah.
It's just like taking a farm and looking at that big 40-acre wood blot in the middle of the farm and going, that's where I'm going. Not me. I'm going off to the side hunting the little ditches and stuff. I'm not hunting that big wood lot because that's probably not where the buck is that I'm after. And when you look at big woods, he's probably not in one big solid chunk of timber. He's going to be where it's swampy, it's low, there's a creek running through. There's going to be some sort of feature there that puts him there. And once again, it's going to relate back to the things that we talk about on the website all the time. You look at big woods, one of my favorite things to look for is swamps, beaver dams. Beaver dams are huge. I mean, they create food, they create openings. They're not out there gnawing on trees. There's no cover in trees, in timber.
No.
You got to find cutovers and the ones that are not getting abused, not next to the road where everybody sees them.
Right.
The ones that are back in a ways, they're off to the side. Or the stuff that's right next to the road and everybody's avoiding. A lot of times you're going down the highway and there's a spot where you turn into the dirt and take the gravel in for a ways. Sometimes if the stuff's there, once again, the overlooked spot might be right where you turn off the highway along the side of it. Nobody goes and hunts alongside the expressway.
Right.
You got to look for those things that are off to the side. And might sound a little cliche, but that's what it is, and that's what you got to concentrate on. And I've had success in big woods, and I get up there and I continually get on the bucks. The trouble is nowadays there hasn't been too many big bucks up in big woods country because of wolves and bears and stuff. They're still there, but you got to work for them a little harder now.
Yeah. Like Magic Man mentioned that with his tracking tactics on his hunting, and one thing that kind of stood out in my mind with his years of tracking bucks on foot and following them through long stretches of big woods was that he's like, again, they move through the property with a purpose. They know where they're going through the property. They don't meander or just wander. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why they're taking the property the way they do. And may it be the grade of the land, if you're looking at a topo map, may it be a change in the cover. Maybe it goes from big timber and, you've got to switch to pine, or you've got to switch to a thicket where there's a little thicket point, or maybe it transitions to a swamp. I think he even mentioned in that podcast where he was tracking that buck and he's like, this buck is not going to walk through this well-known funnel that I know, but he's going right towards there. And all of a sudden, right before the funnel, the buck turned, and there was a heavy trail that cut through this section, a nasty swamp. So again, I think it goes back to, you've got this huge, vast area that's got all common topography, right? It's all big trees. Where is the uncommon spot? Mm-hmm. Where is the uncommon spot that has different vegetation, different land features? And think about how that deer may move through there.
Think about the karate kid in Miyagi. He's got the kid painting the car or something, and the kid can't figure out what he's doing. If I was Miyagi, I'd be telling you, follow deer tracks.
Yeah.
And there's a reason Todd knows all that stuff that he talked to you about. And I know that because I've followed deer tracks. I've tracked deer. I hunt deer tracking. Not as much as he does. But I do follow them a lot in the off season and even during the season.
Yeah.
And look at where they've gone, what they've done. Tracks tell you so much. And when you start following a set of tracks, you really learn some things. And, you go out to the public swamp, you get on a track, and it's a big buck, and you know that buck, and you're following. And it blows my mind away that you think there's hunters everywhere out here, and how that deer can get through a maze where you see him going right for all this hunter's sign, right? And he can get through there and never go past a shootable tree. And it's like, how could you do that? But you follow the path, and you think, wow, this deer really knows what he's doing. And you start looking at this stuff and how he sweeps around a known hunting spot to the downwind side. And you're like, he knows that spot's there. The first time, maybe you think it's a coincidence. But when you start seeing repeated patterns, you start realizing what's going on. And not only that, but when you follow a big buck's track, where does it lead?
Yeah.
Eventually, it's going to take you to his hole, where he lives. You want to know where they live? Follow those tracks. It's following tracks really teaches you a lot. You don't have to be a gun hunter. Some of the guys out here are just bull hunters, and they just hunt instinctively and stuff. I'm not telling you follow them and kill them. It's probably a good method. But I'm saying, follow some tracks every now and then and learn a few things about these deer. You'll learn your property from a deer's eyes, from a deer's perspective. You start to see things. One thing that I'm seeing a lot with tracking deer is that they aren't going beeline to a bed. A lot of times, you start seeing them start to slow down and do some things around bedding, and they go into this bedding area, and you can see them walk around in the bed and face different directions, and they're in that bed, but they never lay down. Then they walk off. And then you think, okay, now he's going to lay down. He gets another bed, and he walks around in a little bit, and then he walks to another one, all in a small area. You know how they got those like 1 acre bedding areas?
Yeah.
And then finally he chooses a bed. And I'm starting to feel from looking at this over and over and over again that they're going in there and they're smelling that bed. Not the bed, but making sure they're safety-wise, they know where the scents are coming from, what's going on. Remember, they see with their nose.
Yep.
But they're actually going in that bed that they were planning on bedding on and saying, not here. I'm going to the next one. Not here. And they're really choosing those spots hard. And I wouldn't know that if I never followed the deer track.
Right.
That would have never came to me. That would never learn that little thing about them. And you start looking at these deer pictures, because I got a lot of people showing me images. Some of them will post them. Some of them want to keep them secret, you know, but I'll show Dan, you know. But I'm seeing a lot of images where people, the big thing now is everybody wants to put these cameras over beds, and it's probably not the greatest thing for hunting, but you'll learn a lot.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of those images where the deer are doing just what I was seeing in the snow tracking, where the deer's in the bed and then it wanders off, and the guy's like, oh, I don't know, they're not bedding here. And I think a lot of it is that little sixth sense when they go into those beds and they're seeing the camera. A lot of times you've got the picture of them looking up into the camera.
Yeah.
You know, they're seeing something, they're sensing something, and then they're moving on. But you see the same thing, coming into the bed, checking it out, smelling around a little bit, and leaving. But why are they going to a bedding area? They're not going there to eat. They're not going there to look for does when it's a buck bedding area. They're going in there to bed. They're coming in there in the morning to bed, but they're not staying there.
Yeah, on, you know, even my camera that I had set up last year, you know, it was interesting, that watering hole scenario, but there was doe and fawn and some smaller bucks on that thing like all summer long. Mm-hmm. And the one or two mature animals we got, what was funny about it is the two picks were on the hottest day of the entire summer, and every other deer that typically crossed that camera's path would walk right into the water and splash around the water and drink and cut through right across it. Mm-hmm. That buck, now you can wonder why it did that. It only stuck its head and neck out, drank water out of the pond, and disappeared, and there was only two picks of it. So it, and my scent was in there because I had been in there to set that camera, you know. So, but it makes you wonder, why did that mature animal not follow those same trails that were just being beat down by every other deer that was coming in there? He only came in, you know.
We were sitting at Andre's house and watching deer in his food plots, and he pointed something out to me. He says, watch this buck when he comes out. So the camera's at this one tree. It's an open area. You watch that buck come out and completely circle around that camera to go to the food. He knew it was there.
Yeah.
Probably don't know it's a camera.
He just knows it's something.
There's something there that ain't right.
Right. That's not.
There's way around.
That concludes today's podcast episode. Please go to thehuntingbeast.com to post any discussions, questions, or comments regarding today's podcast episode.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.